Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends at Music Record Shop. Check them out in the Grand Center area, down there in the Dot Zec building. If you're not in the St. Louis area, you can shop online 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com. They got a lot of fun stuff coming up, including Record Store Day on April 21st. So check out recordstoreday.com for further details regarding some of the exclusive releases coming out that day and stuff. But that'll be a fun one. Come on out and participate in Record Store Day. Support your local record stores. And you can check out, they got a lot of fun things going on over there, like with autographs, a lot of signed records from artists coming through town. I know Judah and the Lion just did a meet and greet and signing over there, so, you know, keep a lookout for some signed records from them, and, you know, all kinds of people. So, again, everything's at musicrecordshop.com. You can follow along with them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and, yeah, shop local.
Podcast is kind of like a, it's like a radio show that's not on the radio, it's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hi, this is Lexi Schlimmer from Candy Coated Evil, and this is Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out at Hess von Schlimmer Metalworks in Morrow, Illinois, with Lexi Schlimmer. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
I'm pumped to be out here talking with you today, talking catch up. This is your third appearance on the show.
It is.
It's been a little bit, though, since we hung out. And both of those appearances, the first one with your sister talking Candy Coated Evil.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set in on Brad's talking about his record and the benefit and all that stuff.
Right.
And then, you've been playing out a ton solo.
Yep.
And I was like, hey, let's hang out and talk about some of these solo tunes.
Yeah, that's a new thing. It was like all last year when Sid was sick and getting over that, which she's clear as of now, so thank God. So the first she actually got clear of the parotid gland cancer, she doesn't have to go back for any of that anymore. So she's 6 years clear of that, and the thyroid stuff, she's clear too. But over the last years, Brian let me sit in on pretty much every gig he did last year, up to a certain point when I had to go back to work in my metal business all the time because I was kind of doing more music, I think, than metal at that point. So Brad went back to kind of doing the solo thing, and I went and decided to dip my toe in this whole complete solo thing myself, which is really the first time I've ever done that. Like, I mean, despite, I guess, maybe a few appearances here and there kind of a thing, I've never really gone by myself and done it, which has been really weird. So it's very scary and naked feeling because you don't have a band and you don't have a Marshall distorted, you know, kind of a thing. I've had to play clean through acoustic with Brad, you know, so through his systems and stuff, I've been able to hear all my mistakes and had to get really, you know, much better at what I do than before. But my first solo gig was at Sour Mash in Edwardsville. Our friend Kanethia, she's got a shop there, and we had played her grand opening, and then, like, I think the next night we were at Village Inn, and then I played that show with my dad, and then got a gig at Stagger Inn through the open mic that they do in Butch Moore, and then I did that Her Story thing in Toco in Belleville. They, you know, called me up to do that, and then I did the River City Opry, Brad Jackson's thing up there.
Yeah.
I got to play solo there. It was a little frosty out front, but I played the house. It was a lot of people at that thing. I was like really surprised, and it was just, I've had to learn how to work with the capo more. And I mean, I've been playing since I was 12, but not like seriously, I guess, until the last few years. So, it's amazing how just one guitar and your voice, how much you can get away with and how much you can't. So you have to really, you know, fit it all together, and I've learned a lot about what I like and what I don't, you know, doing it. So
sure.
It's just been a different experience. Always, I guess it's always an evolving thing, you know, for me. So
Yeah, you mentioned RCO, the River City Opry. Brad's doing. I think that's really a cool thing, and I just had Brad on the show talking about that, and like
I love it.
Check out River City Opry Monthly. It's on Sundays once a month over at Off Broadway,
which is a great venue. On top of that, sure. One of the Manus brothers was right after me, and I was just like, I saw that list, and I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna get my ass stomped, you know. I was just like, this is not gonna be good, you know. And no, I mean it went over pretty well. My grandma said I did good, so if you can impress grandma, you're good to go, you know. She was cool with it. She came out, and my mom came out, and then Mike Leahy, Clownvis, showed up, and I was like, oh man, I'm like, everybody, you know. It's, I like the support, but when you're like, get, you know, kind of sure. sinking your teeth into this whole solo thing, you're just like, oh, nothing like having the best of the best come out, and it's just, ugh. But it was fun. It was really, really a fun experience. And then right after that, I went to the Eagles, and my dad's friend had like ninth row tickets to the Eagles, and he was like, you know, Phil, do you want to go to the Eagles? And my mom didn't want to go, so he took me, and I was like, well, where are the seats? It's like ninth row. I'm like, what? I was like, of course, you know? So I went, and it was a great show. I mean, it was just unbelievable. I was so impressed by the whole deal, so.
Yeah, I was, I would have liked to have seen that. I've never seen the Eagles.
Yeah.
But I think it would be interesting to see them also with Vince Gill and Don's, or Glenn's son was playing, right?
Deacon, yes. Yeah. And he was really good. See, because Vince and Deacon both kind of went halfsies on Glenn's stuff. And Vince Gill was just phenomenal. Like, I mean, I was completely and immediately a fan at that point. You know, I really was, I was never against Vince Gill before, but like, I mean, I have a certain genre of music that I really like, you know, so it was kind of like, you know, he's there, and you know, he's talented, but you really don't know until you're staring at him, and then you're like, oh, well, this is pretty fantastic, you know. And it cracked me up because Joe Walsh, I actually saw Joe Walsh crash the Rolling Stones concert in Nashville back in 2015 when I saw him. And Brad Paisley opened up, and Joe Walsh, all of a sudden he starts going, my Maserati does want to be, you know. And then and it was like, he's like, you know what, wait a minute, I'm gonna let somebody else come out here and do it. And then here comes Joe Walsh, and they started, and he did a few songs with him, and then Carrie Underwood came out, and it was just, I mean, I guess when the Stones are in town, anybody can show up, I guess, right. In Nashville. So I had been exposed to Walsh in person, which was really cool, but seeing him in that element and them letting everybody kind of do their solo stuff, like Vince got to do one of his songs and Joe got to do some of his songs, you know, from his different bands. And but Don Henley did not do any of his songs, which really upset me because I'm a huge Don Henley fan, you know. I was like, oh, come on, you know, and he stayed completely Eagles the whole time. So I don't know.
Do you want me to sing Dirty Laundry for you?
Right now? There you go. Do it. Come on. Bring it on. He was so fantastic. And you know, their opening act, I guess, bailed, like, right before. So it was 2 hours and 45 minutes of just Eagles, which was really cool. Huh. So I was not upset in one bit.
They, I saw Joe, I don't know, maybe a year ago, something like that.
Yeah.
With Brett, with Bad Company over at the Amphitheater, Riverport, and you know, at the time I was kind of thinking like, you know, probably be Bad Company headlining this show, but Joe headlined, and I was like, well, that's kind of, you know, it was like, but Joe had brought out like an 11-piece band with him, so like that hit this huge band, like two key players playing like synth and different stuff, two drum kits, like, you know, three or four background singers, two other guitars, a bass, you know, and like this huge band going in, and he they did Take It to the Limit, and I, you know, I was like, right after, and it was like dedicated to Glenn.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, it was, I don't think there was a dry eye.
I bet
like,
not.
It was like,
oh,
it was, man, such a beautiful thing. And like, it was tough, you know. It was a beautiful song, but it was really, really tough to listen to at the time, like, just cause it was so fresh. But,
right.
You know, so at least, I think it's cool that they keep going on. I mean, that they, you know, and the fact that Deacon, like you said, is playing in his dad's footsteps there and stuff, like, I think that's a pretty cool thing. So,
and very well, might I add. I mean, he was very, I was quite impressed. You know, they could have just picked up anybody, but like they made it work. And I think too, you know, I watched that Eagles documentary on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's fantastic. And I think that's why, like, to see them still go on, even though Glenn was just, that was like his baby. You know, he was just so, you know, a huge part. Him and Don, you know, they were like the founding, you know, fathers of the whole deal. And you know, with the Jackson Browne ties and all that kind of stuff, it was just, oh man, I there was so much talk that they weren't going to go on. If one of them went, that nobody else was going to keep going. And I was glad that they did. So, yeah. You know, they're it's a good tribute. They plug in the right people, in my opinion, because it's, I mean, like, I think of bands like the Stone Temple Pilots, and I saw version one with Scott Weiland, version two with Chester Bennington, and we know how that ended, and so now version three, I'm like, well, don't, maybe you guys might want to hang it up for a little bit, you know, I mean, that's a hard one when you've got a singer, such an intricate singer, you know, that's the voice, and you're either an imitator if you come in second and try to do the same thing, or,
Yeah, not a ton of bands been able to pull it off.
Really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do, I mean, like, obviously, Van Halen had success replacing singers and
right.
AC/DC and a couple other, but, like, and Alice in Chains is the big one for me. Like, they, I really think that, though he's not Lane, but I think William Duvall, like, does a great job. Like, him and Jerry sang on their harmonies together. Sound very close to their records and stuff.
If you close your eyes, yeah. it's a good pass, yeah. Man. Will is very fantastic. Yeah. I saw version 2.0 and I was really,
yeah.
I'm a huge Chains fan. Like, they were really, really, really good.
Yeah,
so.
I saw them at inside the pageant.
Me too. That's where I saw them.
It was awesome. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was just, and it sounds just like the record, which yeah. is even better. You know, and it's just, oh my god.
And that's, I think that's something with that with Alice in Chains too. That you just, a lot of people. My beliefs, maybe it's more common knowledge than them, but I wasn't really aware that Jerry had sang as much as he did.
Yeah.
So
right.
But when, you know, I always thought of Lane just singing, but Jerry carried a lot of that stuff too. So within a lot of harmonies on those songs and things. So
right.
But yeah, no, it's it was cool. And like speaking of a little side story, my friend. He worked at still works at Sugar Fire,
mm-hmm.
and like they got to hang out with Jerry, went like golfing and gave him barbecue and all this stuff.
No
like
way.
Yeah, like I don't know how they all got linked up together. I forget, but like I was just like, that'd be a pretty fun day. Just like they had the day off in St. Louis, so he was hanging out and
do random stuff.
Yeah, just got to go golfing with Jerry and stuff. So
those are the best stories. They really are. And I mean, as far as bands, you know, come like. Changing over people like Velvet Revolver, you know, that originally was supposed to be Keith Nelson and Josh Todd of Buck Cherry were supposed to be in Velvet Revolver, and that I'm so glad that it didn't happen, because then Buck Cherry went on to do their 15 record and, you know, have the success that they did beyond that. So I think it's so weird that these almost close calls that also happen in sure. bands, you know, that resurrecting different forms of these bands and you know, forming somewhat super groups too, you know, I just It's really cool to see, I think, yeah. in today's world. So
just announced today, Wayback Point Fest. Buck Cherry will be at Wayback Point Fest.
Will they?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Buck Cherry, Lit, Offspring, 311, Gym Class Heroes. I don't know a bunch. I mean, it was a pretty good lineup. I mean, I was excited. Those are always fun for me. Like that they've been doing those since for the last. Couple years now, I think, or something.
Buck Cherry's changed a lot since they I mean, man, like they obviously the second version was the version of the guys that I knew since I was 17 years old, you know. So it was Xavier Muriel and Keith Nelson both actually left the band about a year or so ago and pursued other things, and Xavier's building motorcycles now, you know, and Keith wanted to produce and do other things like that. Actually, I saw Sam Colton playing with him at some open jam out in LA, you know, Keith Nelson shows up, you know, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, like what is going on? So Buck Cherry is just still of the original second version is just Josh and Stevie, and then Kelly Lemuse now, you know, playing bass after Jimmy Asher's left or whatever, and yeah. Kelly's cool, you know, he's cool. He went through cancer too about the same time Sid did, and They're good guys. I have to say 15 was a good record. That was like the best one that they did, like sure. in my opinion, other than the very, very first ones, you know, that back in like 2000, 2001. But Time Bomb was good too. But.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked some of the early stuff, Time Bomb.
Oh yeah. Time Bomb was that was the one that got my mom like totally into it. Yeah. And I'll never forget, like, that was 2006. I was 17 years old. My mom was a huge Josh Todd fan. And we got there at 4 o'clock. They picked us up early from school, got there, it got it to Pops at 4 o'clock. It snows on the ground. It was like February 6th or something. And Josh Todd comes out the front door of Pops, and I was like, hold on. And I'm not one, I'm usually hiding. Like, I'm not like real, I don't pursue people the way my sister does. You know, she's very, you know, upfront with people. And so I go flying out of the car, and I'm like, Josh, will you meet my mom? You know, and he was like, okay. And I brought him to the car, and my mom was like, hi. And it was so cool. It's the best picture of my mom smiling, you know. And my mom hates pictures. So that was the first time, like, I met those guys. And Keith, you know, came through the front door. And then, I mean, that was, they wouldn't even put a barricade up against that stage that time. I mean we were touching Josh's shoes at Pops that day. Like, we were grabbing at him, because they didn't care. I mean, it was kind of a small intimate setting at that point. And that was when we started you know, our friendship with those guys. And then later that year, we entered a contest for the song Next to You, and we ended up turning the rights over to 10th Street Entertainment out of New York, and they used the concept that went on VH1 and MTV. I was still in high school when that happened. I got the phone call from my mom, and Sid was at home, and the secretary at school's like, you need to sit down, and your mom's on the phone. They called me, I was in Spanish class, and they're like, and mom's like, oh my God, they're picking up the, you know, your video or whatever. So they reshot it and then put it on VH1 and MTV, and Buckcherry used our test, so we became really good friends with them at that point, and it's been, you know, we've been around them ever since. So yeah, it's just been totally weird things have happened. You know, it's just like, who's that happened to? You know, right. It was YouTube. YouTube was awesome. You know, we had like 26,000 hits in 24 hours. So
you shot like your own video for,
like,
it?
Yeah, like a fan video type thing. Like, we took Sydney was really into videography and cinematography and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, I still remember her first video she ever did. She used Kiss figurines and, you know, on this camera and stuff. And we laugh because she goes under the camera, like, in there, like, her own, like, real analog type moves and camera cuts and stuff. So, but she started messing around with making videos and stuff, and she used to do all my projects. And we both had a project due at school, and we switched because we weren't done with them. So either of our, so she goes, you take mine, I'll take yours, we'll finish them tonight. So we would get there and we would put it in and go, oh my God, I got my sister's project, you know, and bought ourselves 24 hours. So we used to do all our stuff in video. And so, yeah, so we did this Buckcherry video, and, like, we took NSYNC dolls and put their faces on these things, and like, my mom, like, put tattoos on one of them to make it look like Josh, you know, and that kind of thing. And it was this whole concept, and my truck that I had, it was a 97 Dodge Dakota, it's still out front, and it's got Buckcherry on the tailgate, and that was in the video. And Sid did this whole thing, we came up with the concept, and like I said, it was a fan video, and we put it up. They had a contest, and people voted, and it went crazy, and Buckcherry loved it. So then, but they, because it was ours, they had to have their management company get a hold of us, and we had to sign our rights away because they were gonna do it. So they literally did what we did in that video, only with the real guys, which is so cool. So, I mean, I just remember standing there in my living room, like, on VH1, looking at this going, did this just happen? You know, is this, like, how did we do this, you know? But if Sid wouldn't have been so, you know, technologically sound, there's no way we would have ever pulled something like that off. She was super creative and totally into that stuff, and it still is. I mean, she just is always changing her medium, but, like, at that particular time, that was her medium, and she was... Oh my God, so cool.
Very cool.
So, yeah, it was wild. It was a good time.
Yeah. You, well, let's drop in one of these tunes. We did do some live jamming, talking a lot about everybody else's stuff, but like I said, I wanted to share some of your music. What was the first one we did? There was
Blaming
on the Music. Yeah. You want to talk about this song?
Yeah, that was, that one I wrote pretty quick, actually. That was probably been 2012 or so, I guess, that song was written. And it was something that was said to me in my, I had a brand new Kia Soul, and I was sitting in the parking lot with this St. Louis musician I was dating at the time, and it was just funny. We were, Bad Company came on the radio, and I was like, and he was like, you know, Blame It on the Music. And I was like, man, that's a good line. You know, that's like, he said that. And then I was like, so I went home and I wrote the song, and I was just, it just, and it totally went. And then I went to practice the next day or that week or whatever, and showed it to the band, and everybody was like, okay. And so Sid put bass to it and drums, and there it was. It just, it's, I love that song. My favorite compliment, biggest compliment I got of that song is that somebody goes, "Who does that song?" And I was like, it's mine. Yeah. You know, like, I was really excited about it. I was like, yes, that's awesome. Yeah. Like, somebody actually thought it wasn't mine. So I was like, all right, cool. So
that's
cool.
That's got to feel real good.
It does. It was awesome.
That's, I feel like that a lot. Like, you'll get I'll go to shows and people are playing and they'll be like, yeah, this one's a cover. Or say something like that, or this is a new one. So if we mess it up, you know, or something like, well, nobody knows if you messed it up. If it's brand new, you know, just play it.
Right.
And like, but if you're saying it, it's when like people announce it's a cover, like they automatically like are paint. But like, I think if you can sneak it in like that, like you're saying, like just play it, and then people are like, hey, who was that one? And I was like, oh yeah, that's
yeah, mine. No, exactly. And it was a musician I respect very much that actually asked me about it, and I was like, that's pretty cool. Yeah. You know, like, that was just... And I've actually had a couple of people that want to cover it, which is really awesome, too. But it's actually already been recorded for our album that I was turning into a Chinese democracy situation, because it's just been in the can for years. But ever since Sydney was sick and we've had all this other stuff, and recording's expensive, so, you know, we haven't put that out yet. So we're just... But it's sitting there. I mean, one day you'll hear it all and be able to actually keep it. But for now, it's just... This track's just me and that guitar, but it sounds a lot better, I think, through a Marshall. So
yeah, I was digging it. I liked there was a line in there about the dashboard light.
Yeah,
and I just immediately started going through my head thinking, singing Meatloaf, and when you were playing,
yeah, I know, right? That's like, that line. It does remind me of that. But that song, like I said, is very true. It was in my car, and I was like, and it was just so funny because that had killer lights in that Kia Soul. I had that was the one they did all the hamsters on the commercial or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, it had the best lighting in that car. Like, you had it, like, all the doors lit up and everything, and you could change the colors, and it was like boom chick boom, go with the music. It was just totally badass, and I wrecked the damn thing, so I was pretty upset. But
bummer.
Yep.
You were telling me a little bit about your weekend when I showed up. You two spent the weekend in what was it?
Chicago. Yeah. Rosemont, yeah.
For Walker Stalker.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have been, I guess this has kind of become a pretty big part of your metalworking, right? Is these conventions and different things?
It is. It's so it was my sister Sid and my mom, and we all went, the three of us, and we went up to there, and we go to different conventions. We used to do Days of the Dead. Sid, when Hamilton's does Horror Hound, because he's one of the guys that is in charge of Horror Hound and everything, since he's one of the higher ups there, she'll do a booth there of some of our metal stuff. This was my first convention in a while. I haven't done it because Sid goes and does them usually or something like that, and I finally got to. But yeah, we, flat metal, since we have a CNC, 4x8 CNC, and some sculpture art and stuff, we do these, you know, kind of thematic along the lines. Walker Stalker's all about Walking Dead, so we did, like, Daryl Wings, we did big Negans that were silhouettes type thing that up against a fence that had a contrast color, just different things that went with it, and I swear we didn't come back with nothing but like three pairs of earrings and two pieces of metal, which was pretty cool. You know, I mean, we could not believe how much we sold. That first day, I mean, my feet hurt so bad after that first round of things. And it was the best convention we had ever done. Usually at different ones, you really don't know what you're getting into. You really don't know. Not everybody likes this or likes that. You know, with, you know, horror conventions, you know, you have a lot of Jason masks or things that are, you know, Beetlejuice or Freddy Krueger or something like that. You know, you have this kind of... somewhat, but not everybody buys everything. And metal is kind of scary because it's heavy and people don't want to carry it around a convention. So we offer people to come back and get it if they want to buy it and come back and get it. Well, within the first hour, we sold every pair of wings we had, and we had like 15 pairs on us. And then we had like these Lucille signs. We sold out completely out of those. We had like 15 of those. I mean, it was just gone. And then our Facebook was blowing up as we were sitting there because people were taking cards. And, so we were like, man, why didn't we bring more? You know, usually we never have that problem. I'm, you know, just because we sell, like, you'll sell like a few things of everything at one of those. But this was, they capped out at like 25,000 people, and it was C2E2 weekend, which I thought was going to be a direct competition, you know, for it. And then they had my favorite part of the whole deal is they had bomb dogs because of all the, you know, way the world is and everything. And I was petting every bomb dog there was because they're just so cute. You know, they're all labs, like my lab. And there was one of those, that Belgian Shepherds or what. Oh, my God, some beautiful dogs. So, but yeah, like it was awesome. It was definitely kind of one of those supercharged feelings because it's just one of the areas of things that we do, and right. And we get to go, you know, meet some of the people too, and actually, like, Norman Reedus was in our booth looking at stuff, like looking at his silhouettes because of the security guy, and it was like super awesome. He's like, ooh, he's like, me and metal, that's so metal. And I was just like, okay, you know, like, all right, sounds good, you know. And I've met Norman Reedus before, but I was so startled because I came around the corner and here he was. I was like, I don't know what to do, you know. So it was pretty fun, but
so he just walks through the convention?
Yeah, before it opens. Oh, like, okay. Before it opens. So, like, it was just vendors, and he was, and somebody specifically brought him there. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God. And then I wanted to meet Jeffrey Dean Morgan really bad, but his line was, like, to the moon and back. You know, they just, you got to catch him, like, at Starbucks or something. You know, you got a better chance. Sid was hanging out with Michael Rooker and Stephen Ogg, you know. And so she was getting prom photos with people, you know. That's what that's her main, you know, objective and stuff. And Michael Rooker's toasting to her, you know, cancerlessness and all that stuff. It just, and then people, here's the best compliment was, we had these umbrellas that Sid made that said, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. Oh, and yeah. We had them in like Yondu blue. And people were buying them and taking them to Rooker to sign. So, and he was like, Sid made these, you know, he was all excited, you know, because he knew like that it was our stuff that was coming through, and he's having to ship him one because he loves it. Yeah. So it's just totally wild, you know, it's another world. And, but, you know, as Sid would say, you don't get, you don't mess with these people's obsession. Like, these people are very, very serious about, you know, their show and their, whatever they're into. But the best part, too, is it wasn't just Walking Dead. They also had, like, the Gotham guys and a few other shows that were there. It was kind of heroes and villains. And see, the very first Walker Stalker we did in Nashville was, they had some of the Breaking Bad guys, which I love, you know. They were, like, Gus was there, and I'm trying to think who else was there. Of course, Bryan Cranston will never have to do that ever, you know, ever do one of these conventions unless, you know, he runs completely out of money. But, it was Walter Jr. He was the other one that was there. And I was just, it was cool. It was really, really cool. Yeah. So we're going to do the Nashville one coming up, and we're going to have to revamp our e-commerce site and everything so we can, you know, have everything available for, you know, everybody. But yeah, like I said, it was a good weekend. It was fun. Everybody was very tired today. So we're all over it, for sure.
Yeah, very cool. I imagine that'd be pretty wild. I don't know. We kind of talked about it a little bit off mic, but, like, there's a lot of things I, like, get excited about. But, like, I don't know. Some of those things, like, people spend a lot of money to get to go to those and hang with people and stuff. And but, I mean, you know, if that's your thing, like, I mean, it's cool that it's accessible for that, like, that you can.
It is.
You can have that opportunity to get to meet some of these people and stuff.
Well, and the coolest part is, you know, for, like, the vendors or for the people that are there, like, a lot of times you catch these guys in the lobby or eating or something like that. You know, the very first one I ever went to, I mean, was Texas Frightmare. And I didn't even want to go. Like, I had, like, called into work sick and so I couldn't put anything on Facebook. Somebody ran into my car on the way down there. Like, and so I was like, but luckily it didn't hurt anything really bad. And Sid took me to this, and she's like, man, you know, there's this person or whatever. And then I, you know, paid like $10 to meet Anthony Michael Hall. Then we ended up having lunch with him and dinner with him and all this stuff. And it was like totally weird, you know, just weirder things have happened, you know, like you just, these people are accessible, but they're just normal people, you know, they're just, everybody's just got a cool job. But these people, you know, idolize some of these characters and just so obsessed. And I mean, like, I feel like Sydney and I, like, have just, we're very desensitized in a way to all of it. But, you know, it's, I am glad for everybody else that they get to actually say hi to these people, however they've affected them, because, you know, I hope one day I meet Keith Richards and can shake his hand and do that kind of thing. I wish there was more of an accessible situation. And with the way the world is, you know, I feel like everything's going to be less accessible if everything keeps up, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think it's kind of, it's cool though. Like I said, whatever you're into, there's so many of these cons going on now. So, But yeah, it's a neat thing. Like, I've heard, some of these, like, on Stern, like, they've had, like, Shatner on there talking about, you know, doing all these, if he'll ever go do that stuff, and, like, you know, he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And I think he has now since or something, but, mm-hmm. but you know, it's like a lot of these, some of the guys don't want to be a part of it, but the other guys love, you know, getting out there and meeting all the fans and stuff, so.
Well, yeah, and, like, I will fully admit this, we are Christmas present to eat, like, our mother got us all meet and greets for Jason Momoa. Like, that was, we wanted to meet Jason Momoa like it was, you know, like something bad, you know, we went to Kansas City, and we did the VIP thing, and we got our picture with it, and, which was... It was kind of a cattle run at that point, but, I mean, we got to hug Jason Momoa. It was fine. We didn't care, but we went and also did the autograph thing before, so you actually got to talk to him that way. You know, sometimes I find that to be kind of a breakdown. I like the people that have the selfie option because then you can talk to him and get a picture with him right then and there. You don't have to, like, you know, pay this much to $100 to get this autograph and talk to him and no photographic evidence that this ever went down, you know, and then you'd have to pay another $100 to go get this pro prom photo with him over here, you know. So it's a toss up. It depends on who you want to see super bad, you know. And like Jason, I mean, God, he's going to put his kids through college like, twice over already just by him doing the ones that he's done. But he was super nice and just really, really cool. And I was happy about it. I mean, it was cool. It was a good time. Yeah. So, I mean, you can see our pictures. Like, Sid's got her and Alice here, and then, like, you know, Jason. I mean, it was a morale builder for everybody that weekend.
Nice.
So.
Yeah. You, also, since we last spoke, and I guess that was pretty recently, Paul Thorne, our friend, was in town, and
sure was.
You got to hang with him, you said?
Oh, yes. That was, like, the best time ever. Yeah. I went there early. Sydney was actually in Cincinnati, so it was just me. And then, like, I took off work early, and, like, since I know the guys or whatever, and walked in the back door and watched soundcheck and stood there and talked and everything. And then everybody was like, hey, let's go get dinner. And Paul didn't want Thai food, so he was like, okay, Lexi and I are going to go get something else. So we went down to Blueberry Hill and got food. And so it was kind of startling, you know, like, because this was really, like, the first time it was just, you know, Paul and I, like, sitting across from each other, and we're talking about his wife and his family and all this stuff, and we were talking about the new album, which he just recently did, this gospel album and everything like that. And you just kind of have that, like, pinch me moment, because, I mean, I have gone all over this country to see him play, and I just, oh, I love him so much. Like, he's just, his music is awesome, and, you know, the way we found out about him was through Sawyer Brown. They did a cover of Mission Temple, and then my mom looked that up to see who really did it, and it was Paul. And then we saw one of his CDs at a yard sale and started listening to it. And then he played Old Rock House. So Old Rock House is how I originally met him the very first time in 2010. So
I guess I was at that one.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was crazy. And he complimented my necklace and jumped down and danced with me. And then I was pretty much sold, you know, forever. You know, that was pretty much it. So he... And then we produced that show at the Wildy and opened up for him because we wanted to play a gig with him. And so, you know, our grandma, like, financed for us to, like, sell tickets and do this whole production. And it was awesome. Like, it was really, really cool. So we sold tickets and had a concert, and we opened for him. And then we got to open a couple other times after that because they got, you know, we all did that. And so this time they played Del Mar Hall, which... It was almost a sold-out show. Like, it was completely wall-to-wall people. Everybody was excited. Everybody's dancing. The only thing I don't like about it was that there was chairs. And to me, Paul Thorne shows, everybody should be, like, up and down. It's only, I mean, it's kind of mosh pit style, but nobody's moshing. You know, everybody's dancing, you know, kind of a thing. But it kind of sucked because everybody was kind of reserved, so you couldn't be, like, I like to be glued up to the front end of that, you know, that show. But,
Was his set reflective of that? Like, did he play a lot of the slower ones for the chairs, or
I think he played a lot of, I mean, he played a lot of Hammer Nail, which I like that album a ton, you know.
Because, I mean, his music goes all over the place.
It really does. Yeah, so. And now he's getting, it's almost upsetting me because I like so many of, like, the front end of his career, and now he's getting the new stuff, so he has to kind of sprinkle it in. So, like, he did two from the new album, and then, like, a couple from the one right before that, and he kind of, like... So I always tell him, I was like, listen, I'm just going to make your set list tonight, and you're just going to do this. And he just always laughs. He's like, oh, my God. He's like, because I'm always asking him for him. Like, give me what you're going to play, because I want to know, you know. And he laughs at me. We were back there. We were drinking coffee in the green room, and he was telling me that this new gospel song that he does, it sounds like a stripper should dance to it. It sounds like a pole dancing song. And I'm like, that seems kind of... counterproductive to what you're trying to get at. I was like, I said, but I really hope someone comes to you sometime and says, hey, yeah, this is, this was my pole dancing song, you know? This is great, you know?
All right. Mission complete.
Oh, yeah. I love him so much, and he's a really good person, and to talk, you know, and to just to be able to tell him, you know, and I think that was the first time in the 8 years that I've known him that I got to sit across from him and tell him, you know, you are really important to me, you know, as a musician. I mean, I write because the way that he writes is so, it's so true. It's so honest. I feel like it's somewhat simple, but it's a storytelling thing. And I value that so much in musicians and how they write,
sure.
You know, and it takes you through something and you feel... And we were talking about, he and I were talking about Tom Petty at the time, and we were saying, you know, writing simple music. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. Writing simple stuff is sometimes the hardest thing. It's way harder than you would ever imagine. But we were talking about that, and I told him, I said, I just want to thank you, you know, for making music. And he was kind of bashful about it, you know. I think when I finally, like, pegged him on it, I was like, listen, and he does these feature track Fridays where he shows you how to play some of his songs and stuff, which I tune into and learn some of them, and just, you know, just a great deal. We went to Vintage Vinyl too and checked out, he was checking out the comedy section, and then we had to run back, but it was still, it was a cool moment, you know. It's those are the moments that it's like, my life is pretty cool. Like, I really am very, I have so much gratitude for anybody that I've ever wanted to really meet or have in my life. I have had the pleasure of having that happen. So I'm really working on Keith Richards now, you know, because I've seemed to magically, you know, manifest all the rest of this. So come on, Keith, you know, and just hopefully this will, I mean, I just need like 5 minutes, you know, just be like, I love you. You know, you are awesome. I thank you for this. I will not hurt you. You know, I just hug me and get my selfie and we'll be good. You know, so this is fine. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I would have loved that to sit with Paul. Like, he
would love it. I mean, to sit like one of these, like, I think he would do one of these kind of things. Yeah. I think he would just.
I thought about trying to reach out, but it was a Thursday. Right, or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult with me with my work and stuff to find the time to make it happen, and or even so even on my end, like, it would have been difficult to even be available to try to even ask him, but
do that, yeah.
But yeah, now I was thinking about him the other night though, because you mentioned that old Rock House show, and I'm pretty sure it was that same show there, and Patrick Sweeney opened up that night, played solo acoustic with like a stomp box, and mm-hmm. like. And I just recently, and Pat's another one who, like, at that night, I was all about Paul because that's who I was there to see. But I remember meeting Pat, and like, you know, had a great time. I bought his record, and he had available, but he had a new one coming out at the time. And he's like, hey, I'm coming right back to St. Louis in like a, you know, month. We're doing a record release party off Broadway. You should come over there. And I'm like, all right, cool, yeah. So I went, but like, I didn't, you know, at the time, I didn't realize, you know, looking flash forward now, like, how big of an impact Patrick Sweeney's had on my life. Like, I love his stuff too, and like, but I think Paul Thorne for introducing me to Patrick Sweeney.
Yeah.
And but Paul Thorne's records also, like, the same, I think we maybe mentioned it before, but like, I remember I guess I think he was on, well, I know he was on Bob and Tom for the Great Day to Whoop Somebody's Ass, and all that stuff was playing there. And I imagine it was somewhere along those lines. My parents were introduced to him through Bob and Tom. My dad used to listen to a lot of Bob and Tom. And I remember them bringing home a record for Strange Brew and, is that what it's called? Blue Stew?
Blue Stew, yeah.
What's the name of that record, though?
On Blue Stew, that was the second record.
Strange, is that Strange?
Ain't Love Strange?
Ain't Love Strange, yeah. I kind of mashed it all together.
Mm-hmm, it's all good.
But,
a lot of albums
that, but that record, and then I think they brought home another. But, I mean, I, like, dove, like, headfirst into that. Obviously, that's what I was introduced to, my parents' music, so I remember listening to that record and, like, loved it, though. And, like, since now as an adult, I've gone and bought, you know, the rest of the back catalog and become a huge fan. But you know, it's I would love that, though, like, just to get to hang in. He's the type of guy and especially the singer-songwriter stuff, like, that's a lot of what I love doing on this show, and just, like, even hanging with you today, like, I just love hearing the stories behind the songs, and Paul's, like, a great example of that, because he's got so many great stories to go with those songs, and, like...
So true. So. I mean, just his upbringing, that's why he was... Well, I was talking to him about the whole gospel thing, and he's like, well, this is what I grew up around, you know? Yeah. He's like, this is the thing, you know, Dad was a preacher, and Uncle was a pimp, and, you know, this was... it was a lot of angels and demons, you know, for him, And that's what I loved about it. They played at the Sheldon, I guess, like last year. And they did a video right before that. And it was old interviews of Paul, like with the very, very, very beginning. And he, you know, was talking about he had fought, you know, Roberto Duran and all this stuff. And I mean, it's just, he's got a great, great story behind him and all the, sure. all the stuff and all the heartbreak and just... He's just a really cool dude, and I think that and I agree that people need to know who he is. I'm shocked, like, some of my favorite musicians are not bigger, you know, the most talented ones I don't think are as famous as they should be, but everyone I know that knows Paul loves him, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's a very personable individual on top of it, which makes it, you know, all the more exciting, because you can actually level with him, and it makes you feel important. So that's half the battle right there.
Yeah. No, I haven't had lunch with him like you did, but I got to, you know, just a moment, get to shake his hand, get a picture, and, like, I mean, he's super genuine, like, smiles, and, like, you know, everybody gets their moment, and it's, like, it was really cool just to have that with him, like, but he definitely just seems very personable, like, just like you saying, like, you become friends with him just from being a fan. Like, that's, for me, like, the coolest thing through this whole music crazy stuff. I've been a part of it too, like, when I can make that jump from being a fan to friend, like, that's really a cool thing.
Yeah, when they know you and they recognize you. I mean, I feel like that about Blackstone Cherry. Like, they it's the same deal. The Blackstone Cherry was there, and they know us all, because I was going to buy a guitar from Ben Wells, you know. And it's just, it's weird, but, you know, not just Paul, like, Paul's whole band is really fantastic, you know, Bill and Billy and Dr. Love and Ralph and Jeffrey, all of those guys, I know them all very, very well, and they're just wonderful, wonderful people, and I know that they probably get aggravated that I'm always just so starry-eyed over the whole Paul deal, but I love them all, you know, equally, I really do. It's just... we happened to not want Thai food that day, so I actually got my moment at that point to sit there and actually, you know, talk with him about it, and it was just really cool. But they all fantastic musicians.
Definitely. Very cool. Let's throw another one on here. We got Living Loud.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this tune.
Living Loud is pretty much, it's one of those angry songs. I actually wrote this one alongside Anthony Gomes from St. Louis.
Oh, wow.
The blues musician, yeah. He and I wrote this at my house. He was helping, you know, with the melody and stuff, and we've kind of both taken ownership of it, and it's going to be on mine, and it may be on one of his, too, since we both kind of have it. He's may rework it a bit, but we wrote it, and, you know, it's about, you know, not taking shit and being... kind of oppressed, you know, by people and people telling you the way it needs to be and, you know, how you need to do things and live your life. And the whole thing is about, I say, making mama proud. You know, that was actually the way making mama proud happened was I wrote that as a name of an album on my pictures on Facebook. I was just, and it was because I had all these crazy photos of all this crazy stuff that had happened. I mean, just this Time Life movie, you know, all the way through. And I thought, we're making mama proud, you know. And her mom is proud of us. I think we keep her very young and excited, because it's just constant craziness. But I think specifically this song came into play for me later in my life. Like, that was probably written in 2013. But, you know, like, hate fueling fiends, you know, to work harder. You know, I got a lot of crap when I left the paralegal industry and went and opened up our own metal shop. You know, I changed. They're like, what about insurance? What about this? What about that? You can't do that. You can't make, you know, I had, you know, exes. I had everybody that were like, you can't do this. And I'm like, you watch me do this, you know? And I mean, I couldn't have done it without mom and dad and Sid, of course, because we all quit our careers and overnight, like, this was an auction company for 26 years, and we just overnight shut it down, and everybody jumped in and went to town. So, you know, Sid does CNC, and I do, you know, welding, and dad does some welding and powder coating, and mom does the, you know, the cleaning and the grinding and all this stuff. And but, you know, that song particularly is about just, you know, being your own person, and you just have to you know, who cares what everybody else thinks? It's your life. You know, you got to do what you're going to do. And people are going to say whatever they want anyway, you know. That's kind of, I think ultimately my biggest driving force has always been not to disappoint my mother. Like, that is it. Like, that's why I haven't done, you know, massive amounts of drugs or been a drinker or something. I went my entire high school career all the way almost to the, you know, start of my 20s, never touching anything, you know? So that was pretty good. You know, that was pretty good to just be a driving force and really, you know, trying to be focused on a career and what the hell I wanted to do with myself and make of myself, because she gave so much of herself, and so did my father, you know, in the trenches to make our life exciting and fun and back us in music or whatever the hell we wanted to do, that I think that's why, you know, a song like that is really, really dear to me. It's not about, it could be kind of complicated if you listen to it, you know, some people think it's, you know, about a mom not supporting you, but it's not. It's about the other people and your driving force making your mother proud. Like, that's being your only focus, so...
Is that something you do often, co-writing and stuff with
other musicians? Yeah. No, actually, I haven't. It's not been a thing ever. It was funny, like that one in particular. Gomes and I were at my house, and we were playing music, and he was saying, you know, he saw that album on Facebook and about Mike and Mama Proud and something, and he said something about Living Loud, and he was like, we should write. So we had a guitar between us, and we were going back and forth, and it just surfaced, and it happened, and he because I was a publicist for him at the time. I was doing a whole bunch of work for him and everything, and that was like pretty much the only one that we really pursued overall, and I kind of took it and ran with it as my own, but always giving back, you know, back credit on him being an intricate part of it. But I wish I did more co-writing, because yeah. I love to write. Writing is fun. But like the other song that I, you know, did, I mean, is a new one, you know, and that has parts of something that I did a long time ago. So it's got to hit me in a flash, you know. It's kind of got to be something that just all of a sudden comes together. It's not one of those, you know, Brad and I have talked about Tom Petty. He will have written a song and then he'll scrap it and come back to it later. No, I mean, like, if it's not golden immediately, it's over, you know. Like, I don't ever come back to it. It's just like, I just feel like, oh, if it's forced, I can't do it. Right. So, but that one just flowed. So
nice.
It worked.
Cool. Well, you can come see Lexi live this weekend, April 13th at Franchise.
Yeah, it's in Wood River.
Wood River?
Yeah.
And that's 8 to 12 with Brad. On April 14th, Saturday, at Patio's.
Yeah, Patio's in Granite.
And that's 9 to 1 with Brad. And you two, you guys both up there together and song swap kind of thing?
Song swap, or, you know, a lot of times it's mainly... Brad does a lot, majority of the singing on those. We've actually really done a few gigs together since I did the solo thing, so we're starting to, like, sprinkle in more of my type, you know, things in there. But, yeah, those are fun shows because we can, you know, trade solos and things like that. You know, he gets a chance to do more leads than he would normally do if he plays by himself. I get a chance to do leads because, you know, you can't just really abort mission and just start doing leads, because with no backup at all, right. It's really not cool. Unless you're looping, which seems to be a very popular thing these days, which I'm still learning myself. But, yeah, so we trade it out.
Very cool. And you got one more on April 21st. That's also a record store day. You can come out to Stagger Inn, and that's 5 to 8 doing happy hour out there.
Happy hour, yep. That's my solo show. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. So, grab some records at record, support your local record stores, and then come on out afterwards and have a drink and listen to some songs. And you'll be, you're just solo that evening.
Yep,
right?
All me.
Yeah, all Lexi, all night. Very cool. But yeah, we let's close it out. We got one more, and this will be Never Be Mine.
Mm-hmm.
You want to add anything around this song?
Yeah, that's my newest one that I've written. You know, that one is that's mainly just about, I would imagine most people have a relationship that they go through that they have more feelings than the opposite person that they're with, you know, kind of a thing. So they're kind of forcing it to an extent. But yeah, that one, I had the music a long time ago, and the line just kind of happened, and it's actually something that has happened to me in the past a couple times. So I wrote about it, and I was pretty stoked because I needed some new material. I've been kind of on a writer's block for a while, and this was one that was on my mind, so I was able to do it, and I'm pretty stoked about it. So yeah. Hope
plan to go try to record any of these or do anything like that? Or
yeah, the other two are recorded. This one I would like to get recorded before we put out the EP on Chinese Democracy 2.
Well, I mean, as far as like as a solo, though. That would
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I would love to if it wouldn't upset anybody. You know, I would totally do it. The other, you know, the other songs, they have so many other parts with my other with my band. So, I, you know, I like the whole Alive thing. But I would like to put out maybe a little thing just for if I'm going to kind of pursue the solo thing a bit, I need to get some of these kind of recorded and available for people to hear kind of what I'm doing so they know. Yeah. But I'm trying to kind of define my own style and my own self as an artist, and can sometimes be the hardest thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be cool. I mean, you know. There's a lot of people, obviously, balance it all out, having the band, having a solo thing, and our duos.
The or duo,
whatever,
yeah.
Yeah, whatever it is. So
I've been fortunate to kind of run the whole gamut now. Yeah. You know, it's kind of really exciting, and to be, to feel, you know, somewhat successful in all of it. The worst part was is last year they said I had vocal nodules, and it's covering 60% of my my esophagus. So they were... saying I had the second one, I went to a second opinion, I didn't believe the first guy, and the second guy goes, no, you do, and you need to stop singing, or you need to, like, properly learn how to sing. Well, I still have yet to do that, and I'm still kind of, you know, just forcing myself to do it however I want to, and I haven't gotten laryngitis yet, but, and I'll fix it as I'm going, but they told me if they took them off, that they're just going to come back, you know, because... I'm kind of a rough singer. I'm just very vocal and very, very strong, and I'm trying to let the microphone do the work. I'm trying to back it off, and Brad's been really helpful on that. You know, it's like don't force it. You know, try to keep yourself backwards a little bit and use a capo. You know, you gotta basically learn it to make that stuff work for you. It's kind of like the tools that we use. You know,
sure.
You don't have to press down as hard as I press down when I'm, you know, grinding or something or whatever. It's like that's what the tools are there for, to make it a little bit easier on you. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
So
well, hopefully we'll get something out. I mean, I think like I said, I think it'd be cool to get even an EP out there.
I would love it. I would totally do it.
And I guess if you hear this and you want to do some co-writes, reach out. I think that's a cool like thing about what we have going on here in our St. Louis music community. It seems like a ton of people are super supportive and want to just jam and hang out and, you know, see what happens. And so there's a lot of cool things happening and collaborations of all sorts. So
totally.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Come out and see Lexi, and and if you need any metalworking, Hess von Schlemmer will take care of you.
Yeah, we're the coolest thing we're doing now is we're going to do a parts for Xavier Muriel from Buck Cherry, who we were talking about. We're going to do for his bike that's going to be at the Sturgis Museum.
Oh,
they,
wow.
They picked 25 builders and for this passion project for the Michael Lichter exhibit up in Sturgis. And he called us, and he's working with Billy Lane with Choppers Inc. and doing this Sons of Speed thing. And he needed a CNC machine and needed somebody to do these parts. I've known him for 13 years, and I thought it was the sweetest thing that he wanted us to be a part of this, and Sid and I are going to go up there and see it. And we actually had a second builder from that group, which I can't reveal who that one is, but Gilby Clark's actually one of the builders too from, he's actually one of the builders that's getting to build a bike for that exhibit, but the second one is going to be even better. So we're going to have two bikes that we've done stuff on up there, which is going to be really, really exciting. So one of those, we were going from starting with doing Schlafly shelves to now doing bikes for Sturgis. You know, it's been a complete turnover seriously a Cinderella story, this whole deal with this business. So any custom work, whatever you want, you know, if you want, you know, a friggin' 20-foot, you know, fishbowl made out of metal with armature, we could probably do it. We'll give it a try. That's been our motto, is we tried. So
yeah,
kind of our thing.
Very cool. So, well, thank you so much for let me hang out again. This has been,
been
great.
So I really appreciate it.
I will see you soon. Thanks, Lexi.
Thank you.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.